How long have we got? We've got 20 minutes.
Almost half an hour.
Almost
half an
hour.
Okay. So when we finish, if you just let us come through.
And just run away.
And also the person videoing can comment.
Yeah. Excellent. So, who's got the first question? Okay, we'll pass the first question. Who's got the second question? Okay, to get the first question. Is it Karen? No, but there was this. This is actually in the sutras in Buddhism. There was, I don't know if you believe in rebirth, reincarnation or not, but it's a very good story. Somebody came up to the Buddha once and asked him, why is it? Why is it that some people are rich? They hardly do anything, and their business flourishes, they win by the lottery, everything seems to go well in their life, they don't do anything, they're still winning wealthy. Others, you work so hard, you really try all sorts of things, it's really hard to make ends meet. You almost get there and just something comes along and you lose your money again, and life is a struggle financially. Why? What karma did you in your past life to have to work so hard in this life? And the Buddha gave his answer. And a man says, really, oh, enjoy, that's really good. And then he asked the second question. Why is it that in life there's some people that are just born really beautiful, while other people are just ugly? No matter what you do, you're still ugly. And you may have noticed when I mention the word ugly, I put my gaze on the ground. It happened. I did this in Singapore once, and this girl came up and said, why did you say the word ugly when you were looking at me? So I look at the girl, but I also now, when I mention the word beautiful, I put my gaze on. Because not just with a girl, sometimes I said, okay, I'm not going to look at the girl when I say beautiful, I'm a celibate monk. So I look at a guy, and that's sometimes even worse. Go into trouble. So Buddha gave a good understanding why a person is born beautiful, why they're born ugly. It's such a good answer. They answered the second, the last question. Why is it that some people are just intelligent? They hardly need to do much work, and they still get the top A-level scores. They go to university, and they just fly through life with all these qualifications. Why are some people really intelligent? Why are other people, you get extra tuition, you do the course again and again and again, and still you fail? Why are some people just stupid? And the Buddha gave the explanation. He said, you will be stupid in your next life if you do not ask questions in this one. Any questions? That's it, the sutras. You got your chance. You don't have to do the extra homework. Getting scholarships. If you want to be intelligent in your next life, my goodness. It's going to be a very struggle in Europe. Who was coming? Who wants to be intelligent in your next life?
I think it's too much trouble to be intelligent and suffering.
Suffering? Now, if you use your intelligence in the right way.
That's
true. Yeah, in other words, don't pass all the exams. Just fail on purpose. So, yeah, okay, very good. Professor, next lifetime.
I'm not a professor.
Nobel laureate, next time. You ask the question.
Can you say something to make me feel good about British politics?
Yes. Compare it to Syrian politics.
Okay.
Less bad, yeah, but that's pretty good. Less bad. The politicians are representatives of the people. You elected them. Who's to blame? Exactly. Yeah. But so, again, with politics, I said this even this morning, I go back to history and to the Roman Senate. When somebody was standing for election to the Roman Senate, they would wear white clothes. The white clothes they wore was a sign they were standing for election. And the word for white in Latin is called candid, which is where we get the word candidate from. The word candidate originally meant someone who wears white as a sign of the past virtue. In the past, they lived a very good life. They were trustworthy. And so, in the times of Rome, they were elected on what they did in the past, not what they promised in the future. And I don't blame politicians for breaking promises about what they will do in the future. I blame them for making promises in the first place. We don't know what the future might bring. But if a skilled, virtuous, good person, and you've shown that by past behavior, then you should be a candidate. And number two, even our politicians, who would like to be a politician? Because you just pick your nose, it's on the front page of the newspapers. So they should, now I'm not like even the newspapers, not to be so fault-finding and blaming. Spend a little bit of time focusing on the great services which governments give to the people. How many of you remember Monty Python's Life of Brian? Remember that one? And they had the Palestinian Liberation Front for Palestine, said PLNP or something. And then they started their meeting. Out with the Romans! Out with the Romans! What have the Romans ever done for us? They said, well, actually, they built roads. And before the Romans came, he would just be walking and just slip over because they're uneven. The Romans were great road builders. Yeah, the Romans built roads. Yeah, but what have the Romans ever done for us except build roads? Well, you know, sanitation, no flowing water, they were great with aqueducts. Oh yeah, that's the point. What have they ever done for us except roads and aqueducts? Well, you know, it's actually got law and order. You know, before the Romans came, you know, you won't go to the dark streets of in Jerusalem, you know, you might be lucky to come out with your life. It's just really rough areas. They give a law or not? Yeah, okay. But what has the Romans ever done for us other than roads, sanitation, law and order? Oh, the schools? What have they ever done for us? Except law and order, schools, roads, sanitation. Nothing! Nothing! Out with the Romans. That's a very good satire. We're always focusing on what politicians haven't done instead of what they have done. Now, we don't have people disappearing in the middle of the night, never to be heard of again. We don't have people being tortured. We don't have politicians amassing great wealth in this country. In other kinds of places they do. So there is still some sort of goodness to be proud of in the British system. But it's decaying. It's decaying because of neglect of the system. We can do something about it. Democracy should never just be a static thing. We can always improve upon it. One idea. I remember, I've been talking about this for a long time, and somebody must have listened to this, and I saw it in the Melbourne Age, big newspaper in Melbourne, and just after the last election in Australia, where the Labour Party was supposed to win it, but the Conservatives, they call them Liberals over there, they won it. No one knows how on earth they won, and I'm losing my election. And they wound back a lot of climate control action. The present Prime Minister of Australia was famous for coming into Parliament with a lump of coal. What's wrong with coal? Mm. Anyway, after that, then maybe thought, well, how many years is your life expectancy, each one of you? And a young child, a young person, how long do they expect to be on this planet? As they say, many of the elderly people, including me, are probably not going to be alive to see the effects of climate change. Young people, they're going to feel those effects much more than I am. Young people have more stake in life. It's like in a company, they have more shares in the company. So why cannot the number of votes you have be according to your life expectancy? Young people have more votes because they've got more to win or lose from the decisions of Parliament. So we, the youth, would have more influence on politics. Just as if you have shares in a company, the more shares you have, the more votes you have. It shouldn't be that hard to work out. Someone who's 20, life expectancy maybe of 80 or something, 60 years. Someone who's 60, life expectancy of another 30 years or whatever, 20, I don't know. That's how many votes they have. So that one actually, you can justify that as being fair. Also, it would actually skew politics away from a bunch of old men. And I say that as an old man. Interesting. Can be done. It's one solution. You can tweak it this way and that way, but something like that can work. So, this is whenever you're solving problems, you have to think outside the box. That's one great asset of being a Buddhist monk or a Buddhist nun. We live outside the box. So it's so easy to see outside the box. So you get innovative solutions. Who knows, some of them might actually be taken up. Current system is not good enough. And the other thing is the care of the elderly. Remember Greta Thunberg blaming old people for stealing her future? Was Greta an old person in her past life? Is she responsible too? If you believe in rebirth and reincarnation, it changes the whole ball game. If I could convince Donald Trump that he's going to be reincarnated in Syria, and convince Boris Johnson his next life will be spent in Belgium. Who knows? But in particular, I don't know here in the UK, but in Australia there's terrible stories about how people in elderly people's homes are treated. And they're just almost abuse. And they're not given the care which, you know, they deserve. Why? Hard economic times. What do you get out of, you know, economic benefit treating the elderly? But they realise the elderly are going to come back as our children. Now you understand why some children really misbehave. They're just taking revenge on how they were treated when they were old. So in reincarnation, looking after the elderly is an investment in our future. Looking at it that way, wow, let's give some money to our future. All those who are over 60, do you agree with that? Yeah! It's looking in a different way, and there's some truth in that. So economics, yeah, economics is important, but let's actually tweak it so that we look after this world. That's one question.
That's a question.
Okay, yeah.
What do you suggest if, like,
you're doing something you can't help doing that offends others.
Yeah.
And how can you kind of manage those feelings or what comes with
that? Guilt, yeah. Look, it's, we cannot live our life without offending somebody somewhere. So if you do offend somebody, sometimes realize that they can offend you back. Fair, fair. And if somebody does something offensive to you, right, sometimes, look, I'm a Buddhist monk. I just look how I'm dressed. And sometimes people try to upset me and offend me. One of those times, you know how hot it is sometimes in Australia? Much hotter than over here. And so I was being driven down the road in one of the old VW vans, the Combi vans, if you remember what they were like. No air conditioning, had a windows wide open to get at least some air. And we're going down this highway, stopped at a red light. And there's a bunch of kids, maybe 17, 18 years of age. They saw there was a monk in the car, so they decided to have some fun. One of them, in the one of the passenger seats, so came to the right light, right next to me, they're going, ah, ah, ah. And they got my attention. What they're pointing at? Ah, it's a copy of Playboy magazine. Playboy magazine. What a mark. Just having a bit of fun. And did I get upset? Of course not. How did I know it was a Playboy magazine? Did I look at it? No. How do I know it's Playboy magazine? My driver told me. That's what's going on. So, when people try to upset you, pleasing is laughter. Then you can't really be offended when people sort of say something and you laugh. When I was a school teacher, one of the pieces of advice I learned, if you make a mistake, and all the kids in your class start laughing at you, you laugh as well. Then the world never laughs at you. It only laughs with you. And it's totally different. You don't get offended. Sometimes people say little things like, you know, on the aircraft, it's only on American Airlines, they say, what are you wearing under your robes? I said, well, if you really want to find out, you're ordained. And then you'll know. So be a smart aleck when people offend you. And just laugh. Yeah? Good. Yeah, go on.
What happens when you find it really hard to find humour? I've experienced a lot of racial bias, a lot of it is unconscious racial bias.
Yeah.
And it impacts every area of my life.
Yeah.
And I find it very hurtful. And I can see that, it arises on conditions.
Yeah.
You know, people are the way that they are. I find it very hard to find humour in that.
My teacher was in China. Told me the story, there was an Afro-American soldier who used to be a US base close to the monastery during the Vietnam War. And there was an Afro-American soldier who was in a rickshaw being taken from the base into town. And the driver for the rickshaw passed some of his friends in a roadside bar getting drunk. And his friends shouted out in the local language of Lao, sort of, why are you taking that filthy doctor? Pointed to the soldier. No, it was really offensive, racist. And the driver was scared because some of these soldiers had learned the local language. And if he'd have understood he was being called a dirty black dog, that would have been a fight. And he was a big fellow, this Afro-American soldier. But the Afro-American was just smiling and looking at the scenery. And the driver thought, well, he can't understand Lao. So he turned around and said, see how black this dirty African dog is. I'm going to throw him in the river in town for a good wash. Ha 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 ha. They all laughed. And the Afro-American soldier was looking at the scenery just smiling. When they got into town, the soldier just got out of the rickshaw, and walked away without paying. And the driver, well, you haven't paid me, dollars, you've got to pay me. And the soldier turned around and spoke in the most fluent Laotian, dogs do not have money. That was a true story. Why are people racist to your face is to offend you? Be bigger than that. Don't move. And then, whatever people give you and you see don't accept, goes back to them. Otherwise, they call you dog, and they call me sometimes a pig. What do I go?
Oink, oink.
But don't move. Don't allow anybody to control your happiness. Exert your choice. If there is recourse, because maybe in your job, and you are discriminated because of your gender or because of your background, then take it up with senior management. It's not acceptable in today's world. But personally, you don't take it seriously. It says much more about your abuser than it ever says about you. But when it happens again and again and again, I think the word is these days microaggression. It wears you down. Now you can take 5 or 6 mosquito bites. When you get hundreds of mosquito bites, you've had enough. You're worn down. Some of the advice I can give you. Being a Buddhist monk, you just stand out. You weren't normal. People would say, go get a proper job. You're dressed like a girl. I wear a skirt. It's part of my uniform. But I never allow anybody to upset me. My happiness, my integrity, is only I know who I am, what I've done. They may say all sorts of things about you, but that just shows they're a lower form of being. You're much higher than that. Once there was a donkey who was minding his own business and fell in a well. It was a dry well. The bottom wasn't going to be injured or drowned, but couldn't get out. Donkeys can't get out of wells. So he started shouting, "Ee-oh! Ee-oh! Ee-oh!" Which in donkey language means help. And soon a farmer heard it and looked at that stupid old donkey. He never liked the donkey. And the well was really dangerous. He had a spade in the back of his bag, and so decided, okay, I can just kill the donkey and fill the well up at the same time. And started shoveling dirt all over the donkey. And when the donkey realized he had been buried alive, the dog went, ee-oh, ee-oh, which in donkey language said, that's even worse. You can't do that. Bad. But then the donkey fell silent. And the farmer thought, well, that's quick. So he'd already buried him. But the donkey was much smarter. When he got a new shovel full of dirt all over him, the donkey shrunk it off, stabbed it in with his feet, always a centimetre higher. Another shovel full of earth, shrunk it off, another centimetre higher. And soon so much earth shrunk off, stabbed in, got higher and higher and higher. And the farmer was so busy shoveling earth, never noticed 2 big donkey ears appeared just above the top of the well. And shoveled and shoveled and shoveled until the dog was so close to the top could easily jump out. And just to reinforce the message of bad karma, throwing dirt over others, the donkey bit the backside of the backside of the farmer, just to teach him, must always wash your ass. And I think, and that's the time we have to go. So, here's some advice. But please, don't let it demean you. Feel that strong. Sometimes it does demean you. You can be with your friends, be positive people, and after all, that gives you enough energy to actually endure that and not really sort of be believing it and defeat it. You and everybody else who in this world feels that somehow because of their race, because of their gender, because of their sexual orientation, because they may have some disease like schizophrenia or bipolar or autism, or because they may be disabled in another way, you are welcome. You are like the different trees in the forest. Not all trees will be the same, and diversity is the richness. And if anyone is damaged, it's the damaged trees which are bent and crooked, which are the ones I like the most. You go and see a forest, the straight trees, the perfect trees, they're not the beautiful ones. The beautiful ones are the ones which have been damaged, bent and crooked. They're the ones which I like the most. And you belong. Okay. So, I've got to go catch a train now. So, you've got a one?
Yes. Question. You mentioned there's some things that some of our volunteers have made with a lot of love at the back, some calendars and other things and the bag, and hopefully some information about what we're trying to do for developing a Bhikkhuni Sangha here in England. So that means that the women can take full ordination equal to that monks can take, and through that we'll be hopefully strengthening Buddhism and providing another place for you all to come and practice and be part of a really loving community. So there's some information over there, and at the moment we've got a little place in Oxford just to start off, and yes, there's many ways to be involved. The first way is to feed me, because I'm not as fat as Ajahn Brown. So gender fired. So, you know, fatten me up. Come and stay and join in.
Very good. And also,
if there's someone here to...
Not just white nuns.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, just all nuns. And even, I've got quite a few monks who are gender diverse, in the sense of gays and queers, who are monks, do a wonderful job, and also disabled. A couple of monks with clinical schizophrenics, you would never know it. You're welcome. Always find a place. It's beautiful. So, it doesn't matter what race you are, we're all multiracial. Anyway,